1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. It is Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan, how are you today?
Good, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And I know our guest joining us is always doing very well on Feldis and Kale. In fact, making his return appearance on this radio program. In fact, Dan, as you recall, Senator D'Alessandro was our first guest.
Very first guest.
In the history of this radio program. And he has had the courage to come back. We're talking about the Dean of the New Hampshire Senate, Lou D'Alessandro. Lou, welcome back.
You're always good to be back with you, indeed. It certainly, we go back a long way, Ken Kale.
We do.
Your broadcasting days. Your great work throughout the sports world, to be honest with you.
Well, thank you.
And what better day to be on than the opening of camp at UNH for the football program?
Yeah, you know, I was just going to mention that because yesterday they did open camp under Coach McDonald. And, of course, Lou played football at UNH, among other sports. He was a multi-sport athlete. You don't see too many of those at the collegiate level these days. But, Lou, what do you think about the prospects for this year's Wildcats?
Well, I think Coach Mack has everybody back. One kid who was a defensive player opted out not to return. He didn't take that extra year of eligibility. So he's got a full cast back, and I think he's quite excited about it. This is his 23rd year. Can you believe that?
Yeah, wow.
23 years as a head football coach at UNH. And I just was recalling as camp opened, when we used to open camp, we'd open it around the 1st of August. A lot different now, Kitty. We used to go 3 weeks double sessions, and it was murder.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it was.
Chief Boston was a killer in those days. But I think things look good. He opens up early in September, two night games in a row. The first one is away, and the second one is at home. And I think prospects look good for the Wildcats.
Yeah, it's fun to see those night games at UNH.
Oh, yes.
I know they didn't have them back in your day, Lou.
No, they did not. No. They did not have night games. Actually, UConn was one of the few teams in the league in those days that played in the evening. But night football, obviously, throughout the high school situation, we used to play night games when I coached at Bishop Bradley. We'd play Laconia at night all the time. The night games at Gill Stadium, yeah. Most of our games, with the exception of our Thanksgiving game, many of our games were in the evening.
Yeah, yeah. Always great under the lights. And
yes.
Lou, we would be remiss if we did not wish you a happy belated birthday. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Kitty. I appreciate it. Danny showed up, and it was nice to have him at the event.
It's great to see you.
It's, you know, the years are going by in the New York Minute, Kitty, and this birthday was a special one because my whole family was there, all of my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. So it was a banner day for the D'Alessandro family.
Banner day. I mean, there were so many D'Alessandros around. They were going to change the name of that place from the Executive Court to the D'Alessandro Center. It was a great party, Lou. It was a great party.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dan. Thanks to somebody that showed up and obviously great friends and great supporters. Always nice to see them. Flattered and thankful for that.
Well, you deserve it. I mean, Lou has dedicated himself to the state, to public service, and to helping people and making a positive difference, and he's making a positive difference every single day. I used to be in Lou's office, and Lou would just pick up the horn and work things out for constituents left and right, and then he's champion on finance issues, helping to develop that budget, Lou, especially that last budget, which delivered record education funding, finally doing full-day kindergarten, doing mental health, resulted in a surplus, even though everybody said that our budget was structurally deficient, ended up being in a surplus through a pandemic. But then we ended up with this budget that was just passed, and boy, it's a doozy. It's a right-wing budget. And Lou, if you could tell listeners a little bit about some of the things in that budget.
Sure, no question, but a lot of money has been spent, but believe it or not, the surplus, the 21 surplus, over $300 million, most of that was spent, and as a result of that, didn't occur on the balance sheet. So the budget doesn't look like you're spending more than we did in the last biennium. But I think the policy contained in House Bill 2, really dramatic, as you know. Policy should be done in the legislative process with the policy committees. All the policy was thrown into this to this budget, and it's in House Bill 2. This diversity situation is in there, and that's terrible. The abortion situation, the 24 weeks, and the ultrasound is in there. The scholarships, the education scholarships, is in there. Getting rid of the tolls in Merrimack is in there. That bill was tabled on the floor of the Senate. Municipal aid was kicked out, and of course, revenue sharing was again suspended. And the $10,000 is in there for cities that are companies that were fined because of the mask mandate. They're going to get reimbursed up to $10,000. There's $100,000 in the second year for the Layoff Commission. There are just so many things in that budget that obviously should have been played out in the legislative process. But I think the grants, the education grants, those scholarships, which will detract from public education. And you talked about education and how we tried to fund it properly in the last budget, and those gains were taken away. So when you look at it, I think it's going to be problematic. And the tax reductions that are in there, the business profits tax, the business enterprise tax, the rooms and meals tax, and the interest and dividends disappearing at the end of 5 years, those are going to cause some significant problems for future budget writers. And all of that was done in House Bill 2. So, Dan, that's a quick précis, and I'm sure you have dissected it, and we'll be dissecting it as time goes on. And Kenny, I think the key elements of this budget that will be very, very hard to defend are the public policy issues that are in the budget, in House Bill 2, that really should have been put through the entire legislative process. And that wasn't done. And as a result, you got a document that represents a couple of years' work in the legislature, and it's all compiled in a document that was done by the people who created the Committee of Conference, and that was an all-Republican Committee of Conference on both sides. So that's problematic, in my opinion.
Well, Lou, as a longtime educator, you've pretty much spent your life in education. What kind of a long-term impact could this budget have on public education?
Well, I think it destroys. It's the beginning of the destruction of public education, and I think that's a tragedy because public education is what made this country great. You know, I did some historical research on public education in the Granite State, and in 1940, Kitty, Manchester had a high school graduation rate of 10%. 10% high school graduates.
10%, wow.
And that's, you know, pre-World War II. And then we put money into public education. We came up with building aid in 1955. We came up with adequacy based on the courts. So not as good as it should be, but at least we did it. And we built some public schools, and we built a good reputation, which I think is now disintegrating. And public education is under attack, and I think the Commissioner of Education is the basic attacker. And as a result of that, I see the demise of the item that not only made New Hampshire great, but made the United States of America great, a free and adequate public education, equal the playing field. And I find that that's a terrible, terrible situation if it materializes. And that's one of, in my opinion, one of the most devastating effects of this operating budget.
Well, yeah, Well, we'll see how it plays out. You don't sound terribly optimistic, Senator D'Alessandro. No, and, you know, and this is probably the most optimistic guy that you'll ever run into, Senator D'Alessandro. So, if you're not optimistic about it, then I really have to worry.
Well, I think you've got to always be uplifting and optimistic, because that carries the day. But you have to be realistic too, kid. And when you take the money away from public education and you divert it into these other areas, then indeed you do have a problem. And with these scholarships, which you know, really have no limit, there's not a situation where you get that scholarship based on your financial status, they are going to hurt public education. Our goal in this country is to create a public education system that's equal opportunity for everybody. You know, we had segregation, Brown versus the Board of Education, we tried to eliminate that. We tried to invest in our public school system. The public system has proved successful, and we just got to keep that going, man, because equal opportunity is gained through education. You got to educate people. And on the one hand, you're doing voting restriction. On the other hand, you're doing restriction to public education. Hey, these are problems, and we got to solve them, Kenny.
You got to. And, you know, as you have said on the floor, Lou, time and time again, public education saves the nation. And
yes.
Absolutely true. Equal opportunity. Every kid, regardless of their background, where they grew up, should have equal opportunity to live out their God-given talent. That's what public school education is all about. And this effort to divert public tax dollars from public school education to private schools, to religious schools, and send it away, oftentimes unaccountable. Unaccountable.
Yeah. It's a very scary situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very scary.
Talk about
that. You've got young kids, so you have to. My kids all went through public education, Dan. My three children went through public education. My grandchildren have gone through public education. So I've seen the benefits of public education. And listen, not everything is perfect. I understand that, but our goal is to make it better.
Right.
Yeah. And, my two daughters went through public education at Manchester Public Schools, both graduated from Central and went on to very good universities and, doing very well. So, I mean, it's sad to see what may be happening in the future, and in many cases, what was happening now.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, Kitty. Yeah. So we've got to boost public education at the local level. We've got to get our school boards excited about it. I met with the selectmen in Goffstown last week to talk about House Bill 2 and to talk about House Bill 1 and talk about public education and how proud people are in the town of Goffstown of public education. And, you know, we in the city of Manchester have got to work hard. I met with the superintendent last week to talk about where we're going. And, the struggles are before, but you got to go at them and you got to keep going. And, you know, perseverance will pay off in the long run.
I have to jump in. We have to take a quick break. Senator Lou D'Alessandro is with us. And the dean of the New Hampshire Senate, it's Feldis and Kale, 1039, 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Today on Feldis and Kale, we are chatting with the Dean of the New Hampshire Senate, Lou D'Alessandro, the Honorable Lou D'Alessandro at 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Lou, I know another topic that you have mentioned, following you on Twitter, Lou, the rent moratorium has expired. We talked about this on our last Feldis and Kale show. There's still a lot of money out there. A lot of people.
You're right. There's a ton of money. There's $20 million out there, $20 million. There was the last time I checked it. Southern New Hampshire Services is helping to distribute that. People have got to apply. There's a process you go through. To get that money is available. People sometimes, with all of these wonderful things that have been provided by the Biden administration to aid people during these difficult economic times, some people just don't take advantage of these things. And as a result of that, they're their own worst enemy. And if you don't use this money, the money goes back to the federal government. And that's a shame, because there is need. And the moratorium has been extended. As I say, we have mechanisms in place for people to get this money. It's available. Take advantage of it. We have the New Hampshire Housing Finance Authority, which is involved in this process also.
You know, we mentioned, Lou, Dan and I were talking about it on our last show, and, you know, Dan brought up the point, and it's probably a very good one, too, that, you know, some people might be discouraged because there's a lot of paperwork involved in it, a lot of red tape. And it might be discouraging for some people to pursue it because of that.
Yes. Well, I think that's true. You know, red tape always gets in the way. But the people providing the service, I know Southern New Hampshire Services has worked very diligently to do the processing for the area that they're involved in. And I think they do a very good job, and they should get a shout-out for that. And I think the New Hampshire Housing Finance Authority is very, very accommodating as they can, as much as they can be. But you got to do the paperwork, and that's part of our game. You know, we're a terribly bureaucratic society, Kenny, and the bureaucracy sometimes is an impediment rather than a positive. But you got to fight through it. You got to work through it. You've got to keep going, because the positive at the end is very beneficial to the renter. Very beneficial. Dan's work for many cases when he was with Legal Assistance defending these apartment dwellers and so forth. And we have many, many people that need help. And I saw Elliot Berry was on, I think he was on WMUR, talking about the moratorium. But he's very active in that area.
No question about it. And we had Elliot on earlier, a couple months ago, talk about this. But and Lou, absolutely, people on the ground, the community action agencies, Southern New Hampshire Services is an example, in the capital regions, Belknap, Merrimack, CAP, Community Action Program, please apply, go through it. The people there are working in good faith, they're trying hard. Some of the requirements that have been imposed by the so-called gopher, by the Sununu administration, go above and beyond what is necessary. That being said, don't get discouraged. Keep providing as much paperwork as you can. And for landlords too, this is a benefit for them.
Absolutely.
So work with your tenants. Yeah.
Right. It's a two-way situation. You know, they get the tenant gets relief and the landlord gets money. That's a damn good situation the way I look at it. So let's do it properly and help those who are in need. That's what government's all about, and that's what public service is all about. So let's hope that they do that, Dan. That's the big if in this situation.
Now, Lou, I've never gone this long chatting with you without mentioning, my favorite topic with you over the years, and that's expanded gaming here in the state.
Well, Kenny, we got more casinos than there are in Las Vegas.
It true? It's true.
We got a casino in Concord. I want to tell Dan Felton about that. Yeah. It's on Main Street in Concord. I drive by it every day on my way to the State House, Dan, and I know you're not a very strong advocate of casinos, but you got one in Concord.
Right. Isn't that Andy Sanborn's outfit?
Yeah, it is. And the draft has a nice sign in front of it. It says casino, and there's a truck that's usually parked on the side, and all over the side of the truck is casino.
Yeah.
And to the best of my knowledge, we had 16 operated casinos, and of course, charitable gaming casinos. And they've opened a couple more. So, for a no casino state, we got a lot of casinos.
Isn't it ironic? Yeah. And I think it's also ironic that the gentleman, as you alluded to, that owns that establishment was anti-casino.
Oh, yeah, right. His negative
that's
votes
right. I
were
forgot
up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something I could never forget.
Oh, boy.
Hey, look at. We had an opportunity to do something very positive for the state, produce a lot of revenue for the state in a sensible fashion and so forth. So I look at what's in place now, and I look at the ads on television, and you know, they say come play at our casino. We got a dining facility. We've got this. We've got this. We've got this. We've got all the table games. We got them all, and now we'll have you know, the horse racing machines. Historic horse racing. So, yeah Kenny. You know, that's one of the great misses of in New Hampshire. We lost it by one vote.
One vote.
I will never. Yeah. Ever forget that?
One
vote in the House of Representatives,
and Lou, you know as well as I do, if the Garcia sisters hadn't shown up that day, we'd probably have a huge casino off Exit 1 right now.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, look at what they've done at Exit 1. I mean, you got to give Joe Farrell a great deal of credit. He's taken the area. It's you know, a burgeoning economic situation, but indeed, what was proposed there, in my opinion, would have been of more benefit to the state of New Hampshire.
I would say, Lou, that if you know they had acted on your legislation years ago, and I mean we're talking now over 20 years ago. It's not
just 20 years ago. Exactly.
Yeah, and there would not be an Encore casino in Boston today.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. Encore would have just never been, because everything was perfect for New Hampshire. We had the site. We had 100-year history.
Yeah.
with Rocky Gibb Park.
I
know people are still crying in Salem. I can tell you that.
Yeah, and it was a couple of Salem legislators that did them in.
Yep. and they disappeared.
Where are they now? Lou, you're still around. Where are they?
Where are they? I don't know. They're in hiding, I think. They're in the witness protection program, Kenny.
It seems that way. Can anybody find the Garcia sister in Salem? they're not there.
Oh, God. Kenny, you know, We laugh about it, but it's the missed opportunity. But listen, we just got to move on. You know, you always have to move on. And if I have a moment, I'd like to pay tribute to Mike Vlasich, who lost his mother. Mike, a great young man involved in politics, and you know, his mother was born in Italy and migrated to this country, from all that I have heard, a wonderful, wonderful woman, and the other two boys. And of course, Mike has done very, very well in politics in New Hampshire. He's got those two young daughters who are great stars, great softball stars, and Liz Birdie is his wife. So I wanted to pay a special remembrance to Mike's mom. The cornerstone of any society is the family. And good families make for a good life. And I'm sure Mike's mom and dad were responsible. I want deep sympathy to Mike with the passing of his mother.
Our thoughts and prayers to the family. And Lou, what's on tap for the next legislative session?
Well, my prediction is it'll be a brief session. This budget consumed a lot of the energy and a lot of the air. It'll be quick, as usual. They try to bring up in the second year everything that didn't pass in the first year,
right.
And I think that's crazy. But it'll be a shorter session. I think we'll be out of there. It's an election year. The big thing is going to be redistricting, and how the congressional seats are redistricted, and how the House seats and the Senate seats. There's a lot of speculation as to what's going to happen to the Senate seats. So those are, in my opinion, will be the big issues that the legislature will face in the next session.
Lou, on redistricting, what's some of the speculation out there on the state Senate?
Well, the scuttlebutt, you've probably heard it, Dan, is that they want to do something about the Manchester situation.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. And we have three senators from Manchester, and there's speculation that there may be some changes made there.
Yeah.
They can't do much more. I mean, the thing was geared 10 years ago to have 19 Republicans.
Yeah.
And they did that the first year after the redistricting. We only had 5 Democrats return. But it's going to be interesting. Now, the governor has said that he doesn't want any gerrymandering. I think he's made that statement. Well, let's see how that works out.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, he's vetoed our, Louis vetoed our bill to do nonpartisan, independent redistricting process, taking politics out of it. So he vetoed that. So I think the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding's already been baked. So we know where he's at on this. And, and Lou and I agree adamantly that people should be picking their politicians. Politicians shouldn't be picking their voters. This redistricting process is absolutely critical to a clean democratic process moving forward. And as Lou mentioned, they really, last time around, they really, in the state Senate, they really gerrymandered it. And it's the efficiency index measure of gerrymandering, one of the highest gerrymandered legislative bodies in the country. So, it's a surprise that Democrats won the majority in 2018, but we did. We'll see what happens this go around.
Right.
Any other issues that might bubble up that are that you think are in
the
hopper?
The governor has said, and I think did, that the 24-week and the situation regarding a woman's right to choose and the ultrasound that must take place, he said that he might entertain reversing that. That was in House Bill 2, by the way.
Yeah.
So that certainly may come up. And I know Planned Parenthood has been under attack for a number of sessions, really. So maybe some positive things could result as a result of legislation to turn back some of those things. But, there was just so much chaos in this session.
Yeah.
The Speaker of the House passes away. You have a new Speaker. You have that group of rumps, no maskers, no nothing group in the they have pretty much control of the House. It turned out to be quite a process. You weren't in the chamber. The House chamber was not occupied. The Senate eventually appeared in the House chamber for its session. So a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion. The pandemic is certainly the story of the year and kept us apart for a year and a half. And, we just got to get back to doing things. So that's how it looks to me, Diddy.
Well, Lou, as always, a pleasure to have you with us, and we look forward to more chats with you here on Feldes and Kale. And Lou, we will talk with you soon.
Thank you, Lou.
Kid. Thank you, dear. Thank you, kid. Have a great American Day, you guys. Enjoy all the pleasures of New Hampshire.
I was waiting for that, Lou. I love that.
Okay.
I love that.
A great American Day. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Senator Lou D'Alessandro,
Ladine.
He is one of a kind. He represents wards 3, 4, 10, and 11 in Manchester and also Goffstown as well. He's been doing that since 1998, but he's been in public life a lot longer than that and just really one of the great New Hampshire political people of all time. He is really something else, as you could tell. And Dan, coming up on our next segment of Feldes and Kale, we're going to be talking a favorite subject of ours, and that is food.
Food,
glorious food on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale is proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale, great to have you along with us. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And normally at this juncture, of our program. We would be chatting with the executive director of the Granite State Dairy Promotion, Amy Hall, but we have a pinch hitter for Amy today, and pinch hitting for Amy is Colleen Stewart, who is the communications coordinator for the New Hampshire Food Alliance. August is New Hampshire Eats Local Month, and Colleen, welcome to Feldis and Kale. Great to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being with us today, and you know, it's not easy to fill Amy's shoes, but I know you'll do a great job.
That is true. She has huge shoes to fill. I really look up to her and all the work that she does with the with dairy promotion in the state. So, but I'm excited she let me take the reins a little bit today.
So before we talk about the special month that's going on, tell us a little bit about the New Hampshire Food Alliance and what that's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. The New Hampshire Food Alliance is just one program of the Sustainability Institute at UNH. So underneath that kind of moniker is a bunch of different programs, all focused on sustainability and sustainable living. We're very focused on food, which I feel lucky to do because I love to eat. I love food. So it's really exciting. But our main objective is to really connect and network with all the various organizations that are focused on farming and agriculture and food access and all of these kind of things related to our food system. So we have meetings and, you know, we do a lot of promotional campaigns like New Hampshire Eats Local Month, as well as other kind of professional development opportunities for farmers, for folks who work in agriculture, and, you know, for folks that are kind of working on the other focus areas in the food system. So that's the kind of short and sweet to what we do at the Food Alliance.
That's great. Thank you for all that you do, Colleen, and all the work that you do. And, speaking of food, and everybody loves food, and it's our favorite topic on the show. we'll start with a lighter question, Colleen. What is your favorite food? That's
my
a tough
favorite
question. Maybe that's a tough question.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
That's
a tough one. Well, you know, right now it's like the hardest decision in the world because our farmers markets are exploding. I mean, there's produce and meats and vegetables. It's just out of this world. I really love summer tomatoes. I mean, that's just always a treat. They're never better than they are right now, and corn too. I have to say probably right now that's what I'm excited about locally for sure.
Yeah, our kids, Iris and Josie. Iris just turned 4. Josie's coming up on 3 in October, but we have a garden in the backyard, and they'll just walk into the garden, grab tomatoes off the vine, and eat them, and it's just so much fun. And enjoy it quite a bit. And there are so many different opportunities out there for people to buy local food. Talk about some of those opportunities, Colleen.
There is, and it's I think the biggest thing I want to convey about New Hampshire Eats Local Month is that, you know, it encompasses all the different ways that we can eat locally, like you say. I mean, there's signing up for a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture Share, which is a great option. There's going to your local farmer's market and or your local farm stand. But there's also growing your own food, you know, investing in that kind of way of living, and there's ways to support local in that as well. And then dining out at local restaurants when you can, and really thinking about looking at menus and looking at these restaurants that are putting in the extra effort to source local ingredients for their menus, you know, really supporting that work, because that can sometimes be hard for restaurants and for different food producers to source locally, because it's easy to just call in, you know, the big trucks and get your food there, but it's hard to, you know, source individually from each farm and you know, look for things that are going to be good menu items and stuff like that. So, you know, just any way that you can get out and support. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a laundry list of items. If you can just purchase, you know, $5 worth of local food, every little bit helps. It's for everyone. There's a room for everybody at the table, not to make a bad pun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if the pandemic got in the way, but I know there had been an uptick of many restaurants in the state. The farm to table restaurants were growing very rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was kind of a combination. I think before the pandemic, that trend had kind of really started. It kind of really started to take hold. But once the pandemic started, you know, we got to the grocery store and there was nothing on the shelves. And, you know, restaurants were closed and they needed to figure out another way to either use the food that they had in their walk-ins or, you know, keep their relationships with their farmers that they've already, you know, kind of garnered over the past couple of years. And they really pivoted to you know, turning into kind of a food market or doing takeout and kind of being able to have that local supply chain when the big supply chains are really kind of scrambling and shut down. It was like kind of a light bulb moment. It's like, wow, we can feed ourselves, you know, the majority of us feed ourselves from not only our state, but even our region, just from the New England region. There's a lot of food being produced here that we don't always, you know, have in front of us. And it was kind of, like I said, a light bulb moment to just look in our backyards for some of the best food that you can get.
One thing we do know over the years that New Hampshire farmers are very creative. They really are. And you know the great part about it, I know, as you alluded to, Colleen, lots of farmers markets around the state for sure. But you know what? I drive a lot of the back roads of New Hampshire, and you see, you know, just by people's, you know, whether they're farmers or not, or just have gardens in their backyards, you see them selling produce out in front of their homes, or sometimes you see, you know, produce free out in front of their homes, and it's always great. You never know when it's going to pop up, when you're going to see some produce for sale or fresh eggs by the side of the road. It's really amazing some of the things you see in this state.
It is, and it's like kind of a very heartwarming thing to me just to see our sense of community in New Hampshire. I didn't grow up here. I moved here 2 years ago, and I've never seen the way, you know, folks and neighbors and community members kind of really rally around each other, but also the food that's grown here. I think I really, really do see a desire and a you know, a want to really support their neighbors and their friends, because that's who these people are. It's, you know, farmers are not these big, you know, farmers that are, you know, doing these big operations. They're just, you know, your neighbors and your friends, and you want to support them just like in anything else. So it is really great to start seeing the emphasis on local food and purchasing.
We're chatting with Colleen Stewart. She is the communications coordinator for the New Hampshire Food Alliance. This is New Hampshire Eats Local Month in the Granite State. So we'll talk more about that. We'll take a quick break. It's Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale. Here every day from 11 to noon, Monday through Friday, sponsored by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And pinch hitting for Amy Hall today is Colleen Stewart, communications coordinator for the New Hampshire Food Alliance. August is New Hampshire Eats Local Month. And Colleen, during the month, I know you're encouraging people to take part in weekly photo contests. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I wanted to try and, you know, make it as easy as possible for people to kind of get out and enjoy and have fun eating locally and be able to share it, you know, with our friends and our wider kind of statewide audience. So the goal is really simple. You know, go out, take a photo of you eating locally. There's a theme for each week, the 4 weeks of August. This week is our Farmer's Market Hall or your Farm Stand Hall. So take a picture of that big bag full of delicious local groceries and, you know, post a picture on Facebook or Instagram, or you can even email it to us, email it to me, and, you know, just so you can share it and just show your friends and your family how easy and fun it is to get out and support local. The other weeks that are coming up, next week we're doing kind of pick your own, so, you know, going to pick those great blueberries that are bursting off the vines right now. The following week we'll be dining out, so dine local at, you know, a local restaurant that you love. And the last week will kind of be just a showing your local love, so getting out and doing whatever eat local means to you, and, you know, is whether that's cooking a recipe at home with your family with local ingredients, or being in your garden, you know, kind of showing how you get out there and support local. So I'm really excited to see everybody's, the way everybody gets out there and eat some local food, because there's a lot out there right now.
Yeah, how can people get more information, Colleen, about New Hampshire Eats Local Month?
Yeah, all the information is on our website. It's New Hampshire Eats Local Month, or sorry, NewHampshireEatsLocal.com. There's a ton of information about what's going on this month, different activities and campaigns, and just ways to get involved. There's also a lot of great guides and programs that will allow you to search for local foods. So if you don't know where your local market is or farm stands, there's a bunch of resources there to find local food and right near, you know, right at your, out your back door.
You know, we know that there are a lot of, as we mentioned, farm-to-table restaurants here in the Granite State, which is great, and certainly a lot of chain restaurants as well. How much do the chain restaurants use locally produced products here in the state?
I don't have any hard numbers on that, but, you know, from what I hear and being out in the community, I know the change is starting to take hold. I think restaurateurs are really seeing the value in sourcing local and telling their customers that, because they know that's what they are looking for a lot of the time. I know the folks at T-Bones, that chain in Copper Door, I know they're very big supporters of local. All their meats are sourced local, which I think is great. I know Tucker's, and you know, they have various locations. Yeah, they do a lot of that as well. So I think it's definitely happening.
Tucker's definitely, and we you know, I live just a couple blocks from Tucker's in the south end of Concord, and during the pandemic, the height of the pandemic, they would sell some of their eggs too. We get flats of eggs from Tucker's, local eggs, and supporting Tucker's and supporting local food producers was something that Aaron and I value immensely. Mm-hmm. If you are a local food producer, Colleen, you want to reach out to your group, the Food Alliance, how do you get in contact with you?
You guys can head to our website. We have a general email box. You can also reach out to us on social media as well, on Facebook and Instagram. We're at New Hampshire Food Alliance or at New Hampshire Eats Local. Either way, you'll get me, and we can definitely chat and connect.
Well, it's great that there is a designated month for New Hampshire Eats, and you know, we should be eating local every month, but we designate August for that. How long has this been going on, Colleen? How many Augusts have we had New Hampshire Eats Local Month?
It's actually been going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's been almost 10 years, and it's just kind of morphed and changed, and you know, different activities and different campaigns, but I have to shout out to Seacoast Eat Local and obviously the New Hampshire Department of Ag, as well as Monadnock Food Co-op. They're the ones who have really been dedicated to this and got it to where it is right now. So shout out to them for really sticking with it and doing the same great work that we're doing here with at the Food Alliance.
Well, we appreciate all you do, Colleen Stewart. You did a great job today pinch hitting for Amy Hall, and we all look forward to New Hampshire Eats Local Month, and we will try to eat something local every day during the month of August, and then just continue that habit along throughout the calendar year.
Yes, absolutely. It's always a good time to eat local in New Hampshire.
It is. You are absolutely right. Colleen, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Colleen.
Yes, thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Colleen Stewart, who is the communications coordinator for the New Hampshire Food Alliance. Lots of food cooperatives around the state, and they seem to be, no pun intended, growing, Dan.
They, you know, or pun intended, Ken.
Yeah, there was a pun intended, actually. Yeah. Hey, don't forget, getting underway on Friday, and that is, well, if you're listening to our first broadcast of this show, that'll be tomorrow. It'll be the League of New Hampshire Craftsman's Fair.
Yeah.
That's August 7th through the 15th. So it gets underway Saturday, I beg your pardon, Saturday at the Mount Sunapee Resort. So check it out, 10 to 5 daily. We had Miriam Carter on talking about that. So check it out. It's always a great event, as is Feldis and Kale. But this one has come to a close. We will see you next time right here on 103.9 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com.